Fanning, weekends on 2FM.
Now, I want to take a look at something here because it's described as one of the most influential albums of the 90s. It's the Bristol electronic band Massive Attack. They brought, and I'm going to quote this, a fresh vibe and tone called trip-hop to the music scene. Although all the bands who were trip-hop always said, we're not trip-hop. Anyway, the group's defining album is Blue Lines. It's turned 30. And to tell me more about the group's album is Irish Independence music journalist John Marr. Before I talk to him, let's take a listen to one of the classic tracks from it. Yeah, it's about another minute to go, so it is Unfinished. Unfinished Sympathy is what it's called, and we're talking here Massive Attack, as I say. John Marr, independent, John Marr, journalist all over the place. How's it going, Johnny? All right?
I'm very good, Dave. Even better having listened to that.
Right,
still
indeed.
Stands up so well, doesn't it?
Well, that's what we're talking about. We're talking about Blue Lines, Massive Attack, 30 years. Tell me about it. Tell me about the music, first of all.
Yeah, this is such an influential album. Hard to believe it's 30 years old, but it still sounds so fresh. The whole album does, Blue Lines, released, as you say, in 1991, April 91. It gave birth, effectively, to trip-hop, a really influential genre of music, not just in the 1990s, but even to this day. Like, you listen to somebody like For Those I Love, the Dublin musician David Balfe released a very acclaimed debut album a couple of weeks back. And the soundscape of that is partly indebted to the kind of music that Massive Attack were making back in the 90s. That sort of melange of hip-hop and electronica and found sounds and samples and gospel music. There's just so much there that's textured. And it really was revolutionary at the time. And I still think it sounds very much of the present. You know, it doesn't seem dated. You can listen to a lot of music from 1991 and it's very much rooted in that year. But the remarkable thing about Blue Lines and the subsequent pair of albums they released in the 90s is just how fresh they sound today.
And who else are we talking about here? Like, what is this Bristol sound?
Yeah, I mean, before Massive Attack effectively are Robert Del Naja, Andrew Vowles, and Grant Marshall, a.k.a. 3D Mushroom and Daddy G.
What? You mean
but even
Banksy's
before
not
Massive
in the
Attack
band?
Released... well, this is the irony. Some people still labour under the idea that Robert Del Naja is Banksy, but I think it's been well established at this stage that Robin Gunningham, who is a good mate of this trio, is Banksy. But I'm open to correction. So even before Massive Attack began, they were very influential in their home city of Bristol under a troupe called the Wild Bunch. Effectively, it's a loose collective of DJs, including people like Tricky and Nellie Hooper, who were doing interesting things with music then, in that they were incorporating lots of different styles into their sets, but also they had a preference for downbeat music, and there's a sense of the sort of tempo being lowered. And like I whenever I've reviewed Massive Attack, I have to stop myself using the term nocturnal music, but it really is. It's music that kind of evokes a city at night to me, and no more so than an album like Blue Lines. But they had been really important before this album emerged. So it didn't come from nowhere. Like, the Bristol sound was brewing in the 80s, and it was helping create a new form of electronica by fusing this kind of underground, urban British music with a sort of an American kind of hip-hop sensibility, and doing it really well.
Okay, well, the cross-fertilisation of music in lots of different genres down through the years has happened here, there and everywhere, but this was really one where it all came together in terms of, look what Massive Attack has done, we can do it too, and 30 years later, loads have.
Loads have, yeah, and I think cross-fertilisation is exactly the word there, because, you know, there was a sense, particularly in the 80s, of tribes. You know, people would nail their colours to the indie master. You might have post-punk disciples or people that were adamant that soul was the way forward, or nouveau soul, or whatever they wanted to call it, where Massive Attack comes along and incorporates so many different genres. And I think since then, you've got bands that are unwilling to be put into simple boxes and saying we're an indie band with guitars. Like, I mean, we can be an indie band with guitars, but we're also interested in synthesizers and samples and putting some found sounds in there and taking really interesting vocalists, like people like Sharon Nelson, that are so important to the Massive Attack story, and use them in studio. And Massive Attack kind of led the way on that front, but they were followed by a number of groups from Portishead, from Bristol that helped birth the sound. And I think any listener listening to me will know I'm about to say Portishead there, named after a district of Bristol, of course. And, you know, also along with Massive Attack, really important in terms of 1990s British music.
Okay, I'll give you a blast again. We're talking here because I want to look at the album itself of Massive Attack. I was looking back to see Massive Attack. It is Safe From Harm is the song. So, John, the album itself then, what are we talking about here?
Well, we're talking about 45 minutes of very eclectic music over 9 tracks. So for those of us today that despair at the 70 minute and over album, this sort of does a huge amount in 3/4 of an hour. You've got great guest appearances. We've just heard Sharon Nelson again. People like Horace Andy, really important here. Nena Cherry as well. And actually, Andrew Vowles was one of the producers on Nena Cherry's debut, Raw Like Sushi, from a couple of years before that. So, you know, there had been that lineage there as well.
Wasn't she really? We talked to her in the programme some time back, and wasn't she very much, listen, get into the studio and make an album. You guys are great and stop messing around.
Absolutely. She was one of the people, to say to them, you know, stop being backroom people, stop being a loose collective of DJs, get yourselves a name. Ironically enough, though, the name Massive Attack was controversial for a few months during the start of the Gulf War because of sensitivities around the BBC. We saw that a couple of days ago with the Prince Philip death, in terms of how sensitive the Beeb can be. And the band, when they released the second single, which was Unfinished Sympathy, I'm getting ahead of myself there, I'm thinking The Verve, but anyway, Unfinished Sympathy, they had to call themselves Massive, because of course, you know, delicate eared people in Middle England might be upset by the term Massive Attack when there's bombs falling out of the sky in the Far East. All very bizarre. But Nena Cherry was, you know, one of the drivers to say to them, look, You've got something special here. But the thing about Massive Attack is that it's very much a collective effort. I mean, I'm looking at the personnel here on the credits, and there's a lot of people involved. It's not just the trio that kind of I mentioned that kind of anchor Massive Attack. It's all the other people. People like Johnny Dollar, who passed away from cancer at 45 some years later. He was a great producer in the 90s, particularly for electronica, especially for bands, guitar-oriented bands that thought, we want a bit of this electronica thing as well. So it's a huge collective of people. But also I'd say, Dave, besides that, and this might be contradictory, there's like almost a cottage industry as well, because Del Naja, who's so important to the Massive Attack story, is one of the people who helped design their artwork over the years. And this is striking artwork. You know, you've got this flame symbol, immediately identifiable, you know, an album that, you know, for me, while it's completely fresh sounding all the way through, it does evoke a year, and that's 1991, as much as Nirvana would later in the year, or as much as U2 would.
Yeah, it was just about to be grunge coming around the corner, wasn't it? Yeah, that's right. Because I have kind of bittersweet memories of Massive Attack in some ways. Well, one of them is that Like, I've interviewed them a couple of times and got on great, but two other things happened. First of all, I saw them at Three Arena about a year ago, 2 years ago, whatever it was, and I must be the only person that didn't particularly like it. I thought it was just one big globule of noise, and it just didn't work for me. But anyway, I've seen them live before and I thought it was great. But the point of it is, I think they probably are one of the best British bands ever, let alone of the last 30 years.
Yeah,
but
I agree.
When they did when they did their first TV appearance around 91 and 92, and I was doing this live show for Channel 4, and it was live, so the point is, you never know the sound that's going out on the telly. You never know if everything's working, because things go wrong when in a live programme. And when they did the song, I went, oh, that was great. I went over to those great. It wasn't. Some bits and pieces hadn't been heard. Bits and pieces never came through. And they knew it, and they were really annoyed. So I made a quick exit. I didn't stay hanging around where the band was. Anyway, let's take a look at a few other things here, because if your favourite song is Unfinished Sympathy, which was the first one that we heard there, and obviously you think it's one of the best British debut albums. Do you think that it looks back to a time when things really were that good and there were so many good things going around the corner, and that maybe British music lost a certain identity in the early 90s and we really needed this?
Yeah, I think it did. Like, I think bands like The Shaman were doing very well at the time, and you know, you had the likes of EMF and, you know, kind of throwaway stuff to a large degree. Obviously Stone Roses had in 89 had upended so much with their debut album, but there was that kind of in the air, as you just mentioned. Grunge was about to hit really, really big this year in 91. I think REM would release Automatic for the People that year or the year after as well, so the focus kind of shifted then to America quite quickly. But this was the rumblings of a very exciting decade in British music, because obviously you've got Britpop coming along in 93, 94 with Suede and Oasis and Blur. And yet, while Britpop was happening and going on, Massive Attack, for me, were only getting better. Like Protection was the album that came out when I was 19 in 94 that really changed things for me in terms of what music could be. It was just such a brilliant album. And then in 98 you've got Mezzanine, which I think, looking back, of their five studio albums, is their best. It is their most consistently strong album. It is absolutely masterful.
Well, here, hold on. I'll play a track from this first album here again, which is Blue Lines, Massive Attack, and this is called One Love.
It's you I love and not another.
So if Nelly Hooper was, that's called One Love, by the way, if Nelly Hooper was the kind of most in-demand producer of the 90s, and there was a lot that was working for it, that influence later into the 90s, as opposed to the last two decades, there was a lot of it there with some bigger bands, was there?
Like, you know, their compatriots, Portishead, absolutely incorporated so much of that downbeat sound, particularly on the Dummy album, which was brilliant. But then you look at what U2 were doing in the middle part of the 90s after Zooropa, and they're bringing Nelly Hooper in to work on what would become the pop album, although funnily enough he's not officially listed as a producer on that album. But they, so many large bands wanted a piece of this. Hooper would help make one of the most striking debuts of that decade for me, and that's Björk's debut. He also went on to work with people like Madonna and Massive Attack themselves, no slouches in the production department. They are also in demand too. But like, when you go forward and you listen to one of the a really marvellous album from the 2000s, and that's Untrue from Burial. And we actually talk about Banksy and not fully knowing whose identity Banksy is, but also Burial as an underground musician, still up in the air about who is this guy. If you listen to that debut album, or debut or second, don't hold me to it, and just a sense of sort of trip-hop, grime, urban British music coming through, downbeat electronica, lots of sophisticated textures, interesting samples. Again, I'm banging on with that nocturnal sound very much in evidence there. So I think in terms of what Massive Attack achieved on Blue Lines, enormous sense of influence for people that came after that, especially people that were interested in incorporating sophistication into their music, lots of different textures and found sounds, put in street noises, put in car horns blaring, snatches of conversation. Massive Attack did that brilliantly 30 years ago.
Okay, well, listen, John, thank you very much. I think you have made the case all right. Blue Lines is the album, Massive Attack, 30 years old. John Mars.
Dave Fanning, Weekends on 2FM.